Ernest Tower by Don Howarth, with Paul Copley as Ernest and Stephen Thorne as Uncle Leo.
Cousin Ernest was an optimist. He could watch a hailstorm swirling across the canvas roofs of our fairground stalls and say,
"It'll have blown itself out well before we open at 6.
And when some big international conglomerate or hypermarket bids to buy up one of the sites we rented, he laughed off all concern.
"Nothing'll come of it. Their shares are plummeting on Wall Street. The boss jumped out of a 42nd floor window."
Among our people, fairground people, are two classes. The rich ride masters who own the big machines and rule the roost, and the many lesser families who travel with their shooting galleries and candy floss stalls and Alsatians, and a dream seldom spoken of, that they, or their children or grandchildren, might one day themselves become ride masters. It's an all but impossible step. Ernest was one of the few who attempted it.
Uncle Leo did it. Why not us? And he'd never been to school.
At the time of his first bid for glory, Ernest was in his late 30s, an amiable, light-haired man who travelled with a dart stall and a children's roundabout and a crystal ball in which his wife, Rosie, divined the future.
"I see you old, wearing spectacles, looking like your father."
"God forbid."
"And me quite grey."
"But more handsome than ever, with your proud carriage and the fine bones of your face."
"Not discontent, neither of us."
"No.
But I see no big roundabout in the picture with our name inscrolled on its boards. I see no great cathedral wedding for Miranda."
"I'll have another go at Uncle Leo about the ghost train."
Leo McCusker, Rosie's uncle, prince of showmen, owner, inter alia, of 5 dodgems, 2 octopuses, 8 waltzes, 4 speedways and 3 Noah's Arks, was represented by his ragged, middle-aged sons and his splendid machines on half a dozen fairgrounds at any one time. He leased the grounds from local authorities or private landlords and sublet to stallholders the spaces left when his own rides had been built up. Nobody made any move without his approval.
"Ghost train. Offered to you cheap, Ernest. Do I know it?"
"It's been out of action for a year or two. McCowan's."
"McCowan's? It hasn't been functional since my old mother expired. God rest your soul. George McCowan?"
"His widow."
"Horse thieves.
That's a different branch of the family."
"It's been standing with burnt out burrs for 20 years. What sort of class is that?" "Quietly, old man.
It needs a bit doing at it."
"Ghost train. Who but the decrepit and the moribund remember Ghost Train?"
"We thought to update it to a space ride. The track runs through contra-rotating drums, you know, where the skeletons revolve. That could be done up with distant planets and black holes and singing galaxies. Miranda's done the designs."
"Oh, then they'll be beautiful." "But space rides. Didn't all that go out with the life and times of John F. Kennedy? How much do you have to borrow?"
"We know how we'll pay it back."
"Rosie foresees a happy outcome?"
"The best augurs."
"Oh, nobody's infallible. Except the Holy Father, of course."
"Of course."
"If Rosie misreads the portents that you prepared for the debtor's prison, the bailiffs will go through your caravan like an autumn gale. They'll commandeer the telly and the chairs. They'll impound the crystal ball."
"We'll have to risk that."
"Well, it's the right line of thought, Ernest. You deserve success." "Don't you owe it to Rosie, my niece, a sensitive, prescient woman, born into a big roundabout family but reduced by marriage to prognosticating from a glass ball?"
"She deserves better."
"And you a daughter, modest Miranda, whose beauty stops passers-by in their tracks. Handy with the paintbrush, talented in the repair of electrical faults. Is she to spend the golden years of girlhood ducking under flights of darts at your stall?"
"We hope not."
"And you yourself, Ernest. Though of lowly birth, you're a leader of men."
"I wouldn't say that."
"You keep harmony between us all. Smooth out our troubles. You represent the people's wishes to me and convey my instructions to them. You offer wise counsel and gentle solace. And when the hooligans come on Saturday night, you're the first to set about them with your baseball bat."
"I need the exercise."
"In a word, you are the people's unofficial representative and my honorary factotum. We shall all grievously miss you when you follow whatever route your ghost train might take you.
I wasn't intending to take to other routes. I hoped for the main part to stay with you. I came to ask for a few spaces on your side.
Are we talking at cross purpose? I remember this ghost train. It has a frontage of 32 feet.
29.
And a depth of 27, plus bay box and steps. It houses a railway. Where would I find that kind of space for you?
I can think of several places where we could pack them in tighter.
Oh, is that the kind of fare we want? Packed tight, custom going on because people can't get through to the steps. Accidents, publicity, coroner's inquest. Quiet, the owner.
It wouldn't come to that.
Listen, any machine is competition. So, we must ask of any new machine, does it enhance the fare? Will it help to draw in extra custom for us all to share, stallholders and machine men alike? Does McCowan's rustic ghost train fulfil those criteria?
Not wholly, as it stands.
Nah, your time will come, Ernest. You're a talented family. You stand well in my regard and in public esteem. What need do you have of a ramshackle machine?
It'd have been a start up the ladder.
Yeah, and what would that count for at the judgment day? Contentment is known to be prized. I see wealthy men come and go, whizzing by care, chewing indigestion pills, hitting the bottle. A good name is worth more in heaven. We used to sing a hymn. The rich man with his dodgems, the poor man at his stall. He made them high and lowly, but called them showmen all. Who are we to dispute the dispositions of the Almighty?
Mean old man. He could easily have rented you a few of the extra spaces he takes for himself every year.
He's still buying more machines. His book was a Neville suit and a razor to go see what's new in America.
Machine. They'll never let you in except very rarely by marriage.
That's how you've got as far as you've gone, Daddy.
I'd note. I've never dreamt of marrying a fine lady from a high-born family. And one moreover, bringing a dowry of a dark store.
That was my woman's portion. My brothers are millionaires. But keep yourself smart and demure, child. And someday, who knows, your prince might come. A machine man.
Cousin Neville, for instance.
Oh, no!
God forbid! Though, in truth, these days, if you're not born a machine person, first or second male child, your fate is never to become one.
It can remain an aspiration.
Everybody has secret dreams.
New mummy.
We had so many beautiful things when I was a child. So many splendid occasions. I would wish that for you. I would wish for your father the success he deserves. And yes, I would wish for myself to move again in that, what would one say, aristocratic society.
Summer was all toil, crawling from town to town in processions of tractors and trailers, loading and unloading, building up and breaking down, slinging coloured lights, desperate to make the most of the light evenings. Miranda, as lithe as a cat, did as much climbing and humping as anybody, more, in fact, because Ernest was often called away to sort out people's troubles, and Rosie suffered headaches brought on by the stress of the business and the tension of precognition.
Miranda, dear, don't put my teacup there. It reflects in the bowl.
Sorry, Mum.
Now, for you, young lady, I foresee a long journey. But it leads not this time to your crock of gold.
Oh.
Your rainbow ends when time's wheel shall have turned again. Understand?
Time's wheel brought no noticeable improvement in Ernest and Rosie's fortunes, but an unexpected success came to Miranda. Handy with the paintbrush from early childhood, she was increasingly sought after to decorate people's stalls, and one Sunday evening, when fair families were out walking the canal towpath, Uncle Leo stopped to talk and, at a rich man's whim, started her on her first big panorama.
We had a horse once, Miranda. We got her off a bargee.
He was a good old thing. He'd draw the caravan so gently you'd never hear a cup or a saucer rattle.
I've seen your photo of him.
Gentleness. That was the requirement on the waterways. In old days, they didn't deliver loads with the tins dented and the cornflakes busting out of the packets. You must immortalise that old horse, Miranda.
What does that mean?
Incorporate him into one of your paintings.
Oh, I'll try.
Yeah. On days like this, the great horse plodding the ripples of the wake in the evening sun. If only there had been more years before steam and machinery drove life to a frantic pace, we should all have sailed into a serene future. It would have changed the history of the world.
Miranda borrowed the photograph and copied the old horse into a panoramic frieze, which was mounted to encircle the top of Leo's great waltzer.
That's the very image of him. Isn't that the image of him in the shafts, Ernest?
More like than the photograph.
And what vicinities are depicted there in the background? What land? What country?
I don't think it's particular spot.
Oh, it's just that it happens to come out. The undiscovered country.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Hold on, Robert.
Undiscovered country? She's a child. What sort of talk is that?
It's something Dad says.
The place of dreams.
All dreams are not good dreams. She's too young to trespass there.
Yearnings, let's say. Nothing outlandish.
Light dreams. Things that are past and things that will now never be. If we had our own country, not to deal with the income tax inspectors and the market superintendents of the world, but to have a separate country of our own.
A travelling country.
Existing in the same time and place as Her Majesty's realm, but each visible to the other only in the hours of business. My old mother, God rest her soul, had that vision in her last days.
Oh. A happy vision to depart with.
And as she journeyed on beyond what is known, where could she come to but the undiscovered country? And if it is as the child has painted it, then she passed into a serene sort of paradise.
You do not know the perils of looking beyond, Uncle Leo. You are all romantics. I fear for all of you.
The next day brought everyone down to earth. Jack Henson, chairman of the council's heritage committee, arrived in his Homburg hat, solemn-faced like an undertaker. He called first on Ernest for a sensible chat. Then together they went over to Uncle Leo's caravan, where Leona, his Alsatian bitch, stood guard over his displayed silverware and porcelain.
Quiet, Leona.
It's nothing new, of course, with all long known of the intention to build a recreation centre in town, which, understandably, may be less welcome to you than to the resident community.
Recreation centres. They come and go. Speedway. Discos. What's the other, Ernest?
Snooker halls.
You're a good health care.
Oh, cheers.
They won't drive out the old attractions. Lights, music, taking the best girl on a ride. Who propose the world that you were projecting crematorium?
Right, recreation centre. Aerobics, assertiveness training, football in the community, that sort of thing.
Quiet, the owner. It's not competition.
Not in the sense of its activities, perhaps more so in the sense of the venue.
What's that?
Where are they going to put it up?
Well, listen, they can put it up next door. Competition does it hard business. He doubles it.
I don't think they're proposing to put it up next door, Uncle Leo.
No.
Well, finish your drink, then. Where's the contention?
The councillor seems poised to tell us.
Where are they?
On the spare ground itself.
We have ancient rights to stand there, rescued from despotic kings and wicked nobles. The House of Lords will annul and render void you and lost. Your chamber will be suspended by ADA, by royal prerogative. Your person cast in dungeon deep till sight fails and flesh falls from the bone. Isn't that so, Ernest?
Every time, Uncle Leo.
But by way of amend.
Make a peace with God, not me.
Then, God willing, what we're moving towards and what we require, smooth seas and smiling skies to attain, is agreement on an alternative site well before building commences.
What's an alternative to the town centre?
an alternative to making a living.
We stand by our ancient rights.
Which the authority seeks in no way to abrogate, but rather, if we might all consider it, to transfer to the prosperous outskirts, inhabited by the A's and B's, with boats and gas lamps in the front gardens and high disposable incomes, a site, I may say, repeatedly denied to hypermarkets and international conglomerates.
Where is it?
Britannia Moor.
I'm an old man. I've never heard of it.
Oh, speak to history. Site of the battle of that name, the Civil War, and Camelot, and of that great meeting where John Wesley won 240 souls for Christ. The ducking stool and the stocks remain.
Midges.
Who?
John Wesley and King Camelot. Listen, the horses were no bigger than dogs. We've seen John Wesley's armour, haven't we, Ernest?
Oh, wouldn't get a dwarf into it.
So what?
So what's the size of the field he operated in? Listen, he ran a flea circus. Would we get six machines on, Ernest?
Doubtful. We measured up.
That's right, last time it was brought up. We've been through all this. Who came last time?
Guthrie, was it? Planning officer.
Guthrie, that's him. He's dead.
He was alive at the time.
I don't dispute that.
Didn't we take him the dimensions, Ernest?
His young lady read them out to him.
He had a patch over one eye.
How did it end? Didn't the late lamented Mr. Guthridge offer some park instead?
So he did. I remember. Well, yes. There is a park. Good. But in this collection and at this early stage, it really can be no more than a gleam in the eye.
What's his name?
A light on a very distant horizon. Parker Park. We've passed it, Uncle Leo.
Well, without noticing it. Is this another site for John Wesley's fleet?
No. Not that it's remotely on the agenda, but no, a most spacious domain.
Domain? Of some aristocrat or noble?
Or ignoble. The ignoble Sir Percival Parker.
Is this?
A pillar of the past. Built mills, sank coal mines, raised chapels, crammed the faces of the poor.
Oh, one or two.
And at his decease, bequeathed his park to the burgesses of the town in perpetuity.
Well, but that length of a lease, it didn't work.
But I can't remotely promise anything in that direction.
Well, why are we talking then?
Exploratory, I think, Uncle Leo.
Yes, yes. Well, what I'm saying is whether it's Britannia Moor soon or Parker Park in some distant golden future, there's big fish to fry. Don't start a fire in the chip pan.
What does that mean, Ernest?
Stay calm, lie low, and you've a better chance of landing up someday on the Elysian fields.
My brother's been there. Wasn't worth taking the tackle off the trailer.
He's not been to Britannia Moor, and still less to Parker Park.
So what's offered? Britannia Moor, Parker Park, both or neither?
Neither. Not yet. But bear with due process, and in due time...
Due time. Listen, if they let us on Blackpool Pleasure Beach in the year 3000, who arrives at the Promised Land? The dead in their coffins, the debtors in their prisons, the children with rickets and the starvelings with their begging bowls. No to the moor, no to the park. We stand unshifting on the spur ground in the town centre that is ours by ancient right. You're up, sir. Good morning.
Miranda continued to prosper with the paintbrush. A woman from the art school came to tempt her with the offer of a place. Then came a new honour from our own people. Miranda was invited to paint the great panels of Joe Stanley's boxing booth, or rather, to retouch the figures of pugilists painted for all time by Joe Stanley's father in 1937.
That's a great man you were painting, Miranda.
Yes, Uncle Leo.
Joe Louis, the Brown Bomber. Only three men went the distance with him.
If he had a left lead as long as illustrated, nobody'd get within half a mile of him.
Only three men went the distance, and one of them was Tommy Farr.
Fairground boxer,
from South Wales. And on August the 30th, 1937, he met Joe Louis, the Brown Bomber from Detroit, to contest the world heavyweight title at the Yankee Stadium in New York over 15 rounds.
And who won?
Who won? You've been to school, they don't teach history anymore. If Tommy had won, everything would have been transformed. It would have changed the history of the world.
The panel's been different to start with.
And this morning, Miranda, you'd be painting Tommy.
with the brown bomber out of the picture altogether, or at the best hanging senseless over the bottom rope.
Joe Stanley rallied a little before going down for the final count. His family had him unwired and withdrawn from hospital to settle his earthly affairs by putting his shaky cross on papers they shoved under his nose. He was brought out, supported by two bruisers, to view the panels.
Can you see without your specs, Uncle Joe? All right, then. This is the young lady what refurbished the brown bomber. You remember Miranda, Leo's great niece.
You've done your duty by your father. You can die happy now, Joe.
The good death for which we all pray.
And Miranda, she could go on from this. She could be painting the Sistine Chapel or the Big Dipper at Blackpool before she's an old woman.
See, you've launched this young lady into the big time, Uncle Joe.
Miranda did a term at the art school in winter and returned to her dart stall when spring arrived and the tractors and caravans rolled again. She was back in time to hear first tidings of Ernest's impressive speculation.
Well, are you going to tell us?
Tell you what?
Oh. You've bought something, haven't you?
What have you bought, Daddy?
It's something tall, not sturdy. Something we haven't seen in its present ignoble state. Is that it?
Go in cheap. Unrepeatable bargain.
Oh, come on, what is it?
A tower, sort of.
Tower?
60 feet high, enspiraled by a helter-skelter.
Oh, Daddy, where is it? When can we get it?
On a field near Nantwich.
Standing erect, pointing to the stars.
An old couple are selling it. The inside stairs got too steep for them.
So, it's in pieces on the ground?
More or less.
But it's all there?
Basically, yes. Some sections are a bit charred. Some kids tried to set fire to it.
How much?
What we've got in the building society, and the rest over 5 years when we're up and running.
Oh, my dear, how can we ever be up and running? Uncle Leo is never going to give us the spaces to stand. We've been to it all with the ghost train.
Ah, this is different. It's not competition for him. It's not a machine.
Well.
And what's most to the point, we'll be asking for little more frontage than a couple of stalls. It has its being not on terra firma, but in the upper atmosphere, where it'll trespass on nobody's space.
We are staking everything.
Yes. I had to give an answer. There was another bidder.
If it fails, if we can't get spaces at enough fares, we shall lose everything. The stalls, the roundabout, the lorries, this caravan, which is our home.
Well, we're both past 40 now. If we leave it any longer, we won't have the years left. We'll trundle round with our stalls until we're too feeble to shift them.
Yes. If it is to be done, it must be done now. You deserve success, and we will support you, however things may turn out.
We shan't fail. It'll be wonderful.
Wonderful the tower eventually was, and in the early days of its restoration came a hopeful development about the site the corporation might offer in compensation for the one to be surrendered in Middletown Centre. Jack Henson, Heritage Committee chairman and an undaunted conspirator, maintained a sort of shuttle diplomacy between many interests.
I'm an old man. Talk to Ernest. He's been in the army.
So, one breezy day, Jack rested Ernest away from working on the tower and drove him up to Britannia Moor, the least favoured and therefore the most readily offered of alternative sites.
How many thousand feet is this above sea level? Commands great views on a better day. Bitter cold. Fresh. Desolate, wouldn't you say? Perfect elevated background for your painted stalls and twinkling lights. It won't do, will it?
Less than ideal.
I've come prepared to hear that. Let's drive down and get a coffee somewhere. Please.
The moor, of course, you could have used without further description. The other possible site in which we intentionally spoke, Parker Park.
Yeah, that is altogether more difficult.
The trust deeds written 150 years ago, they are open in a changed world to different interpretations. And the park has become a political football.
Oh, that's bad.
Their class interest. The Tories would let a coal hit a bomb, but nobody balls up in a caravan. The Lib Dems, they are environmentalists, which we all go along with in many aspects, of course.
Of course.
But they won't stand you churning up the sward with your diesel tractors and wrecking the habitats of the birds and ducks.
But we'd avoid that.
Now, our own party, it's not plain sailing even there. Especially there, I think.
Oh, dear.
The economic structure of your society is perceived as leaving much to be desired.
Oh?
The extremes of wealth and poverty. On the one hand, Leo, with his great machines all over the country churning out profits, his caravan crammed with priceless swag and his mattress stuffed with a prince's ransom. On the other hand, the wretched old man next to his waltzer, passing over candy floss with frozen purple hands.
They all have cold hands in that family.
Yet, and I pointed this out to critical comrades, Ernest, it's incorrect to condemn your society as feudal.
Good.
Oh. Tribal, it may remain, but feudal it is not. There's surely more to socialism, Ernest, than Peterloo and the Tolkien Martyrs. There is a tradition of suffering, but there is also a tradition of suffering defied, Ernest, which your people, with their noise and their bright colours and their romantic notions, represent.
Good.
A strand of history, too often neglected by the movement. The unquenchable gaiety in the hearts of the oppressed masses. Laughter in the coal mine. The song in the landlord's fields.
Be careful, you knock your cup over, Lord.
Sorry.
Do you want to fill up, gentlemen? We're closing in 10 minutes. They come in to test the water for contamination.
No thanks. We're on the point of leaving anyway. Where was I up to, Ernest?
The song in the landlord's field.
Exactly. An irrepressible gaiety which you and your good people exemplify and perpetuate.
Thank you.
This is not just about a few roundabouts in a public park, Ernest. It goes to the root of the ideological struggle. What is heritage? Is it the conservation, preservation, fossilization of a dead past? Or is it the utilization for today's recreational purposes of those amenities brought to us through the struggle of the toiling masses and the forces of history?
The latter, I'd say.
I'd like to see your fair, Leo's fair, rolling into Parker Park.
Great.
It would be a demarche to confound the reactionaries throughout the town, and in particular, the bourgeoisie and the posh ads would be on the park railings.
So, I can tell Uncle Leo it's settled?
Ernest, not quite, I'm afraid. Not quite. There's a mountain to climb in committee, in council. The right-wing opposition would outvote, but only with the support of our own left-wing, Ken Carandus and the Amanda woman. And, of course, they're asking a price. They want to use Parker Park to form up for their demos and Parker Hall for summer schools, which, as we read it, would be in violation of the trust deed.
Oh, complicated.
What in a flood of applications would make yours outstanding?
Our record. We've killed nobody. We don't have fights. We're clear up behind us. He pays the lease in cash.
It just have to be more than the old rent downtown.
He knows what's reasonable.
Would he like to double the size of the old site? Could he fill it?
He could fill it with his own machines alone.
And the rent doubled pro rata?
It'd have to be negotiated. But, broadly, more land, more rent.
It's going to take time. The less said publicly, the better. I don't think that at this stage we want to burden Uncle Leo with the tedious details.
Huh?
And for the present, let's keep this matter confidential between the two of us. I'll keep you posted, and we must meet privily for the sort of full and frank exchange of views we've enjoyed today.
Swing up now, please, gentlemen. They're here to test me water.
By now, it had become clear that the restoration of the tower was going to cost more and take longer than Ernest, in his enthusiasm, had calculated. It was all coming and going. Rosie, who did the accounts, suffered a recurrence of headaches. One day, a frame was delivered to the wrong size.
It's easily modified, Rosie, dear. There's nothing.
We've gone about this all wrong.
You sent them the right measurement.
Not the frame, the whole thing. We shouldn't have put all this into the tower till we were sure of spaces to stand.
No, no, you're following the best track. I know Leo. What does he want in his old age? Not riches any longer, he's got a van full. What could better contribute to his pleasure and earn his practical gratitude than this tower here to be restored to its pristine glory?
The grand plan was to restore the tower well beyond its pristine glory. Miranda's great inspiration, expressed in coloured drawings, was to paint the tower not with its original clowns and stars, but with the sky of an eternal summer, in which puffs of cumulus cloud floated high above the tiny hills and woods and villages. It was an aviator's sky, tremulous with the zoom and tumble of Camels and Fokkers, Spitfires and Messerschmitts, and the earth below, down at the level of the pay box, was a place of celebration of feats accomplished, vibrant with church bells and brightened by the small light of accompanying angels. Everybody was enthralled by the drawings. Rosie was overwhelmed.
It's too much. Hubris, the sin of pride. Babel fell, reaching for the heavens.
Daddy, she can't go on like this, not knowing. As she says, long uncertainty darkens the spirit more heavily than one bad answer. We must know. You must get an answer from Uncle Leo.
I understand you, Ernest. I've heard good reports of it. An edifice of imposing presence and small girth.
Crowd puller. Visible from miles away over the rooftops.
But then, by the same token, Ernest, might it not cast a long and somber shadow, dwarfing the rides, making of us a race of pygmies? Roistering punters have tumbled over the sides of these things.
Roistering punters have been flung by the water into the car park.
Tabloid stories, God forbid. But how can I oblige you, Ernest? Shall I turn off a few stallholders' families to give your tower their spaces? Shall I take the bread from their mouths?
No.
Ernest, are we not on familiar ground? Did we not hold this conversation only a couple of months ago?
5 years.
Shall time passes. Come to me 20 years ago, and I'd have found you 30, 40, 50 spaces in a season. Now I've barely enough land for the machines I've got, and I'm obliged to go on buying more machines.
Why, Uncle Leo?
To stave off ruin. To keep out of the debtor's jail. What do I spend? Nothing. Where do I go? Nowhere. I'm on my showgrounds night and day.
You are.
Spend nothing. Pay me funds, starvation wages, me workers sleep under the machines.
You're a byword for thrift.
But you see the business. We're raking it in. If we don't get the taking spent year upon year, we're robbed at each year end by the inland revenue.
Outrageous.
It's a vicious pile. The more new machines we buy, the more money we take, and the more machines we're obliged to buy to avoid crippling taxation. And so ad infinitum and eternal perdition.
It's heartbreaking.
My poor old mother would have wept, God rest her soul. All we had was a steam tractor and an old waltzer. We were blind as birds. Where is that feast today?
Whatever was rumoured afterwards, it was not Ernest who shoved Uncle Leo into the canal. What happened was that one drizzly Sunday evening, Ernest and Cecil from the boxing booth were returning from a few hours' rather half-hearted work on the tower when, crossing the bridge, they saw Leo down on the bank, throwing sticks for Leona to retrieve. He had a good throw for an old man, and, noticing that he had an audience, he exerted himself to fling a branch right across to the opposite bank and launched himself into the water.
Sweet Jesus! Help! Save me, Officer Testo! Help!
Leona, crouched on splayed legs as Uncle Leo bubbled up and down, eventually had the sense to respond to his cries. She leapt in, snatched his floating hat and swam back with it to the towpath.
I suppose we should fish him out, Ernest.
Yes.
But I can't swim.
And I'm wearing my best coupling shirt.
Even so, Ernest, I think it is safe to take the plunge. People are coming.
Hold me, coat.
Knock him out, Ernest.
Oh, rescue him, Ernest. Rescue him.
Gently, Ernest. He's an old man.
They sank and bobbled like a pair of corks. Ernest grabbed at him, chopped at his grasping arms, kicked him off, touched his silver hair and swallowed a roar of canal water. A dead rat floated past.
All right now, Ernest.
We'll get the meal on this.
I've got his collar.
Gently, he's not used to water.
All up now.
1, 2, 3.
Volumes of water cascaded from his clothes back into the canal.
Get out of it, Leona!
They landed him on the bank like a thin black fish and were instantly attacked by the dog.
Get out of it, Leona!
Heads of families shoved and jostled for a turn to apply remedies, while lesser members, younger brothers, children, and maidenhoods, fought off the dog. They pummeled and pumped Uncle Leo. They worked his arms and legs. They rolled him over onto his front and slapped him back again onto his back. When they had nearly killed him, a woman said,
"He's not long for this world.
Send for a doctor.
Send for the priest.
Someone is cold."
Sweet Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God.
A procession from the canal, numbering about 100, reached the fairground, bearing Uncle Leo laid out and oozing on an old door somebody had found, and leading Leona, her mouth wedged open by a stick thrust across her back molars and tied by a handkerchief round the back of her head. They followed into his caravan. Priests arrived, then a doctor, a speculative undertaker, and Leo's sons in their big, battered cars. The crowded caravan rocked on its springs. Ernest, toweling himself dry, kept surveillance from the window of his own caravan.
That's about 60 gone in. They'll all be smoking, they'll have got the whiskey out. They'll all be telling him what they did to rescue him from the watery depth.
You go and put the record straight, Dad. Oh, here comes Cecil.
How is this, Cecil?
Still half out. They're giving him the salt. They're flapping him with a towel.
That sounds bad.
The boss priest thinks they're in a hurry. He won't administer the last rites until he's finished his cigar.
There's Cousin Roger leaving now, and Neville.
Poor bereaved boys. Their faces are dark with sorrow.
That can only mean he's recovering.
That's a good one, Ernie. One thing he was chuddering about, Ernie.
What's that?
His false teeth fell out in the canal. He was griping that you ought to have thought about it at the time.
Oh, how could he?
So, to finish the job, he's saying, will you go back and dive till you find them? I'll be down at the booth if you want me.
Thanks, Cecil.
God's good, and inscrutable are his ways. How now can Uncle Leo deny your modest request?
I wouldn't bet on that.
You saved his life. What more could anyone do for him?
You should go and speak for yourself, Ernest, before the others, mere onlookers, exhaust the contrition and generosity that spring from his close encounter.
Go over, Dad. They'll be at him as he comes round, asking favours, getting him to peel off wads for charities and the holy saints.
Don't begrudge the holy saints their pittance, child. They earn every penny of it. But you should go, Ernest, and speak for yourself.
We'll leave it a few days. I'm hoping for some tidings that might just be the clincher.
Ernest, I appreciate your tactful absence in these days. I'm an old man. Too many flies have been buzzing round the jamble.
I can't buzz.
I brought this picture Miranda's painted of your rescue.
That's the kindly providence.
And, to a lesser extent, to me and Cecil.
Many helping hands.
Late arrivals. Miranda's painted it accurate in every detail. No mobs. Just me and Cecil at the critical moment. That's me, arcing through the air in me dive.
She's got Leona good on the job, bath.
And you there, bubbling up and down in the water.
She's a young woman of rare talent. How can I reward her for this historic painting?
Don't think of it, Uncle Leo.
Would you care, perhaps, for this handsome barometer?
Oh, sure.
And not wholly functional, but easily repaired by any handy woman.
May it be set fine for all of us.
Amen. And now for you, Ernest. Happy, diligent, high in my esteem. What do you lack in this world?
Spaces.
Spaces?
50 a year to rent on your site to stand me tower and stalls.
50? Ernest, what wise hand might guide your eyes away from this unattainable goal? What might deflect you from this via dolorosa that can only end in tears?
Well, thanks for the barometer, Uncle Leo.
Oh, thank you for the picture. Thank Miranda.
Oh, I meant to tell you, I've got an answer from Jack Henson, the Heritage Committee chap.
A dusty answer?
No, it rather exceeds our best hopes.
Tell me.
We can have two separate weeks on Parker Park, starting next year.
How can we account for the working of grace? What acreage?
About twice what we have downtown.
Including the sward in front of the bandstand?
Including that sward.
I'm an old man. Too much is happening these days.
I'll leave you, Uncle Lee.
No, you mustn't go empty-handed.
I've got the barometer.
Hauling me out of the canal. Any humane passerby might have done. But you, Ernest, have laid a new province at my feet.
Jack Henson did a lot of skullduggery to help it along.
Grace and skullduggery working hand in hand. Is he looking for a backhander?
Nothing outrageous. He's got some sort of political interest.
An acquisition of ancient rights that will change the history of the world. Of my new province, Ernest, I grant you a fiefdom.
Meaning what, Uncle Leo?
What you ask for. Spaces. In recognition of your lifetime service crowned by these fruits of negotiation, I grant you, your heirs, progeny and assigns in perpetuity at each of the biennial fairs at Parker Park, a space suitable for the erection of a tower or helter-skelter or such other piece of non-mechanical equipment as you, your said heirs, progeny and assigns, may, from time to time, deem fit.
I could bring my tower onto Parker Park?
In perpetuity.
Thank you, Uncle Leo.
Don't thank me. Thank God.
But, not to look a gift horse in the mouth, it doesn't quite solve my problem.
Well, space on the park twice a year.
Two sparrows don't make a summer.
Ernest, we've all got to start somewhere.
Two spaces, 2 weeks opening in a year, is something short of a start.
Well, I hear you've put feelers out to other lessees outside the family. Barkers, Vickers, Sam Bradshaw.
I've got promises of 6 spaces. 8, if you count what you are now offering at Parker Park. It's not a living.
Oh, Ernest, you're still trying to defy the laws of nature. You're playing Simple Simon. You'll only get spaces if you've spaces to offer in return. Quid pro quo. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Okay. How many spaces would you intend to reserve on Parker Park for yourself?
Well, it's new. We want to make it good. 10 machines, why not? Say 12 fire shows.
Twice a year, that's 50 spaces.
For a start, see how we go.
I'll agree to that.
What?
You can have 50 spaces at Parker Park. Quid pro quo, you give me, through the season, 50 spaces at sites where you're the lessee.
Ernest, are you running the temperature? I am the lessee from Middletown Council.
And for the downtown site, now surrendered. Parker Park's a new contract. There's a new lessee.
Who?
Me.
Do you have it in writing?
The lease is being prepared.
It's verbal, then. Word of honour of politicians and councillors, horse thieves and cutthroats. They're not like us, Ernest. They're devious. They're using you as a pawn in a wider game.
No doubt.
Do they know you're broke? How do you figure to pay the advance rent?
I'll manage.
Okay. You be the lessee at Barker Park. I'll bring nothing. The stallholders wouldn't wish to incur my displeasure. They won't come. You'll have the whole site to fix your tower and your two stalls.
I hope you'll come, Uncle Leo.
You'll see.
If not, then it'll have to be Barker's and Vickers and Sam Bradshaw. They'd do a deal. I'm offering it you first.
Barker's, Vickers, Sam Bradshaw in his pinstripe suit, bringing their machines into our towns. Sharp operators rolling into my territory like the panzer divisions of ill repute. How could I raise my head? Betrayed by my own family, the favoured nephew who I have nurtured and guided from childhood. My old mother, God rest her soul, would have wept.
That's why I'm offering you the deal first, Uncle Leo.
The tower stood on a rise of ground opposite Parker Hall, dominating the acres of caravans and tractors and machines and sideshows and stalls. It was magnificent. Miranda climbed onto its domed roof and planted the Union flag. Her skyscapers, now seen assembled together, were incomparably more imposing than the drawings. They extended the whole height of the tower, translucent blue, broken by puffs of summer cumulus, reflecting the morning sunlight and the joy of early flight. Uncle Leo, by way of riposte, did not boycott Parker Park, but on the contrary, sought to impose an overwhelming presence. He applied for and was granted by Ernest 25 spaces, onto which he brought, among other rides, two new machines imported from America and a great roller coaster bought in Germany which nobody had seen before. He was permitted the honour of responding at the opening ceremony to Councillor Jack Henson, Chairman of the Heritage Committee.
Sir, in restoring this board to the people, in recognizing our inalienable ancient rights, sine die, and in perpetuity, you have changed the history of the world. And as a mark of quid pro quo, I have pleasure in presenting you with this marble clock, which is a runner, and came here today under its own steam. May St. Barnabas keep you in good health and out of prison, and may the sun continue to shine on all of us.
Everybody was smiling. Everybody was taking money. Queues of people sweating in the sunshine formed at the pay boxes.
It's cooler up there in the clouds.
People labored up the interior stairs of the tower and hurtled down the spiral chute past the cannonades of Miranda's aerial battles.
It's like an open-air exhibition of your work across the showground, Miranda. The tower, the old canal horse plodding round Uncle Leo's waltzer, the brown bomber over there.
An open challenge to go free 2 minutes!
And the roses you painted round the door of Lily Battersby's chip stall. It's a long time now since you did some of them.
Well, good time.
You're better to come. This really is a rake up. A few more like this, and we'll have it all paid off in 3 years.
The lull came, as it usually does, about tea time. The sky clouded over. People began to feel tired. Children cried. Some families made for home. Rosie retired to the living van with a bad headache. The rising wind drove litter round the stalls. The rain came. People ran. Those on the steps inside the tower turned and panicked down to the entrance. Those already sliding down the chute were pursued by a wave of floodwater and deposited on the squelching turf by the table. The storm swept across the fairground, grabbing at the canvas roofs of stalls. It plastered summer shirts and dresses against bodies. It whistled through the dodgings.
Come on, men! What's wrong with you? Get the covers tied down!
Ponds spread. The caravan overturned. Candy floss floated out of a stall and twirled across roofs like a pale comet. Lightning struck. Ernest's tower twisted, sprouting flames. And toppled. It sliced through Uncle Leo's caravan. His priceless collection of gold, china, and silverware cascaded through the breach. Uncle Leo and his dog Leona popped their heads up through the sparkling rubble.
Look this way into the picture, Squire. Natty Booth, Middletown Gleaner again. Smile, please.
Ernest and family were the last to leave the sodden scene at Parker Park. From their caravan, they watched the line of other people's tractors and trailers squelching away through the mud.
I can only express my contrition to one and all.
Revolting ambition that all leaks itself.
You tried to warn me.
I saw dark skies.
I'd no right to expose you to all that anxiety.
It was an adventure.
And you, my love, with all your talent, you should have been left free to go to art school and start in real painting.
I was never up to that. I'm a fairground painter, that's all. That suits me.
Well, thank God we still have our health and our sanity.
We have the lease on Parker Park.
And surely he wouldn't impound our stalls, our basic livelihood by way of compensation.
No, no. Given a bit of goodwill, it'll be amicably sorted out. We don't really have a care in the world. Nothing to worry about but just sedately roll along on days of high summer into the peaceful twilight years.
And that would suffice.
What more could a man ask?
What more indeed?
So why do I see you furtively plotting in the dark corner of the pub?
What?
Me? When?
Yesterday. Or tomorrow, I don't know. In the Greyhound, I think it is. Conferring privily with Uncle Leo's sons, Roddy and Neville.
Come on, Dad, tell us.
Just turning possibilities over. Neville wants out.
Neville never wanted in.
His visits to America to look at machines. Apparently he's been looking at a young lady as well. He wants to offer her a house on Long Island. And a Ferrari.
No, Neville. I'll bet he doesn't even own his own caravan.
He owns his caravan and a lot more besides. Eight of the machines, it transpires, are his. And a score of sideshows.
Don't believe it.
Came to him in his youth from his mother's side, the boss.
Yes, I remember now from long ago. Uncle Leo would never allow it to be spoken of. And Neville, a young boy at the time, suffered himself to be treated as a penniless son.
So what's changed?
For one thing, the American young lady. For another, Uncle Leo having to be pulled out of the canal and dug out from under his swag. It shamed his nerves and rattled his authority. Neville's emboldened to defy the old man and sell up and go.
Well, that shouldn't be difficult.
Ah, but under the will, he can only sell among our own extended family. It'd finish Uncle Leo off if Neville sold his portion to outsiders. Neville couldn't bring himself to that.
God forbid.
What, his tackle must be worth a million.
Several millions.
But who except outsiders has that?
Neville wouldn't expect to be paid off in tenors. It'd have to be through a bank loan with the tackle as security. Cousin Tom Shaw was mentioned as a possible punter, in for a share.
And who else?
Jack Muldoon.
Yes, they say he's got a million in ready in his silver sandwich.
And who else, Ernest? Do I not see another name emerging among the plotters in the darkened pub?
Well, it was just broached that if all else failed...
If all else failed...
And Fort Demure.
Fort Demure.
We ourselves might care to go along with the general swim of things and take a small piece of the action. Say, just to put a round figure on it, 3 machines, including the American Octopus. And the sights to go with them, of course.
Of course. Miranda, the burden will fall on you, child, when God in his mercy shall take our work-worn frames. I see the debt in its banker's interest cascading down the groaning generations.
We don't have to sign up to it.
But we must, Daddy. Big machines, high societies, the chumps you've both dreamed of and worked for all your years.
Rosie?
I see we have no choice now. If we refuse, how could we ever in future years face the eyes at the caravan windows watching us? An aging couple drawing up with our little old stalls on the trail.
Yes.
But I can't disguise from you both that I see dark clouds above the wider roads we now must take.
Mummy, we'd be lost in unfamiliar country if you saw anything different.
In Ernest Tower by Don Howard, Paul Copley was Ernest, Stephen Thorne, Uncle Leo, and Robin Herford, the narrator. Rose was played by Elizabeth Bell, Henson, Sam Kelly, Miranda, Alison Pettit, Cecil, Terence Edmund, and the waitress, Helen Ayres. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Original music was composed by Simon Moorcroft. Ernest's Tower was directed by Gordon House.